Messages from the House.
January the 24th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 7. Mr. President, the Speaker of the House of Representatives has appointed the following standing committee changes for the 2013 general session of the 62nd Legislature. Committee number 8, Transportation, Tom Reeder. Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, Lloyd Larson. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 24th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 178, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 39, penalties for misdemeanor offenses. Ayes 26, noes 33, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 24th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 127, Driver's Licenses, Veterans Designation, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 108, Food Freedom Act. Ayes 45, noes 13, excused 2. House Bill number 143, Game Roadkill. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. House Bill number 149, State Mythical Creature. Ayes 48, noes 10, excused 2. House Bill number 186, Tax Exemption for Natural Gas Filling Station Equipment. Ayes 34, noes 25, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 24th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, Mr. President, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Eliminations System, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 95, Railroad Crossing On-Track Vehicles, ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1. House Bill number 151, Uniform Trust Code Notice of Claims, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 167, Judicial Retirement Age, ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1. House Bill number 188, Investment of Public Funds, Interest-Bearing Deposits, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 190, Public Defender's Fee Schedule and Indemnity Standard, ayes 59, excused 1. And House Bill number 25, Simulcast of Paramutual Events, ayes 44, noes 15, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 188, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 188, Investment of Public Funds Interest-Bearing Deposits, sponsored by Representative Stubson, and Act relating to public funds, passed the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 188 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 25, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 25, Simulcasting of Paramutual Events, sponsored by Representative Wallace, an act relating to paramutual wagering, Pass the House on third reading, ayes 44, noes 15, excused 1.
House Bill 25 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 7, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 7, Sanitary Facilities for Motion Picture Operators, sponsored by Senator Representative Gingery, and Act Relating to Public Health and Safety. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 7 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 28, first reading on the House Bill.
House Bill Number 28, Disabled Hunter Program, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 28 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 29, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 29, Game Licenses Landowner Coupons, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 29 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 41, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 41, Wild Bison Licenses, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to game and fish. Pass the House in an amended form, I-59, excused 1.
House Bill 41 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 110, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 110, Off-Road Vehicle Gasoline Tax Distribution Sunset, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to gasoline tax distribution. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 110 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 122, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 122, Alcoholic Beverages Purchases Acceptable Identification, sponsored by Representative Petroff, and Act Relating to Alcohol. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 122 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 95, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 95, Railroad Crossings On-Track Vehicles, sponsored by Representative Blake, an act relating to public safety. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1.
House Bill 95 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 56, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System, sponsored by Representative Gear, an act relating to environmental quality. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 56 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Mr. Roadkill. That clears the deck. We're at that order of business consideration of bills on general file, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
That one leaves me speechless. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senator Nutty.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate Bill 90. The reading clerk will read the file in.
Senate File 90, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Land, sponsored by Senator Bebout, and Act relating to state lands.
You have heard the reading of
It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Driscoll excused. Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, I move that Senate File 90 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout to explain the bill.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I would ask that the Standing Committee Amendment be read in, please, at this time.
Senate File 90, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would also move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 90. At the appropriate time, I will discuss that. Members of the Senate, this bill comes as a result of some situations that exist in the state and in several of our departments relative to acquired state lands and the what I would consider or call the highest and best use of that. And when we first discovered this a couple of years ago, we played with an idea of how to deal with it. We thought the best thing to do would be to ask the director of the Office of State Lands to investigate it and come back with recommendations. Madam Chairman, what we did is we had in our 2012 session laws, Chapter 26, Section 2, a footnote that said the director of the Office of State Lands and Investments shall review the control, leasing, exchange, care, and disposal of all institutionally acquired lands held by, and there's three of them we looked at, DFS, Department of Health, and Department of Correction. Then they would report back to the Minerals Business and Economic Development Committee their results. And, Madam Chairman, we have this report, and anyone that would like to see a copy of it, I can share it with you. And what happened, Madam Chairman, is that the Minerals Committee had a lot of activity and was really busy with a lot of other bills, didn't get around to doing this bill, so I bring this bill as an individual bill. And, Madam Chairman, what the bill does, and if you looked on page 2, and each one of them is the same, it goes from the Department of Health, Department of Family Service, and Department of Corrections. And if you look at the language on there on page 2, starting with G, it's the Board of Land Commissioners shall direct, subject to the limitations contained in the instruction. It goes on to talk about it. Essentially, what they're saying is they're going to look at these lands that are held by these three departments, and there's about 20 parcels that are held by these departments, and determine whether or not that they're getting the highest and best use of that. And, Madam Chairman, all money that should they decide that there's a better use and those lands should possibly be sold, all those monies will revert to the general fund. Madam Chairman, on page 2, line 11, you reference to Wyoming Statute 92-2005C, and it's the same for each department. And that refers simply to the reorganization of state government that set up this department and said where the responsibilities were. And, Madam Chairman, if you go over to the top of page 3, you can see we put some definitions in because we want to be very clear that we did not in any way, shape, or form get involved in the trust lands of the state of Wyoming. So we have a definition of acquired institutional lands, which means state lands acquired by the state for the benefit of state institutions, but shall not include school lands or other lands held in trust by the state of Wyoming. And then we struggled with the definition, but we came up with this one for highest and best use and means a use that will yield the maximum possible benefit to the state without impairing foreseeable uses of the property by the department. And, Madam Chairman, like I said, this is Corrections, Health, and Family Services. I will tell you of the 20 parcels that's contained in the report, and once again, I would be glad to share this with anyone that likes to see it, that almost every parcel had something needed to be done in terms of management of that land. And you all know that we've had an ongoing project for like the last 3 or 4 or 5 years to finally have a complete inventory of what the state owns and make sure that we have the fee title in the file, whether or not we have any leases on it. And we've about got that completed, and this is more or less one last step to do that. And of those 20 lands, there are definitely some lands that have a higher best use that might be explored by the state land board, and where they could be used better for commercial. You might have a situation where you have a tract of land that's being used for agriculture purposes, yet it might have high commercial value. Madam Chairman, that's the purpose of the bill. I'd like to move to the Standing Committee Amendment, explain the Standing Committee Amendment. It went to the Appropriations Committee, and we deleted the appropriation that was for $50,000. After receiving the fiscal note and visiting with Mr. Lance, the director, I visited with him a little bit more, and he thought he could do it without any extra money, and that's why the Appropriations Committee took the money out. And with that, if there are any questions on the Standing Committee, I'd like to answer those questions. If not, I call for the question.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to SF-90, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Amendment Number 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill.
Madam Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much. Madam Chairman, I know that around our state, many of our institutions have fairly large amount of land. One, of course, I'm most familiar with is the Wyoming Life Resource Center, which has, you know, at one time all these facilities were kind of self-funded, and they had a farm, and they have agricultural land. And so in the case of Lander, there's quite a bit of land surrounding the facility, and I assume that's the kind of land that we're talking about. We actually had a discussion in here, I believe it was last year, Madam Chairman, about the issue of proposed transfer of land to between different departments. And I think that what happened in that discussion was that it sort of illustrates the problem of the highest and best use, Madam Chairman. And what I worry about is that a couple of things. This land was originally acquired for the benefit of those facilities. Of course, with this bill, that benefit goes away, and the proceeds of the land disposition would go to the general fund. And I understand that those facilities have all changed so much over the long time. But the notice that we're just going to manage for the highest and best use has me a bit concerned, Madam Chairman, because I think I'd be more comfortable with language that talked about the highest and best use, which is compatible with the functioning and goals of the facility. For example, in the case of the Wyoming Life Resource Center, the highest and best use for that adjacent land might be an oil refinery or, you know, you pick the use, manufacturing facility, what have you. I don't think that's the highest and best use in terms of the compatibility with respect to the operation of the Wyoming Life Resource Center. I'm sure there are similar issues all around, and I definitely think that if you restrict consideration to be highest and best use only, you put yourself in a box. Madam Chairman, there's the other issue. Local governments have zoning requirements. They have different things. This may indeed be a loophole around the zoning requirements. One time I was an advisor to the state with respect to a land sale in Teton County. One of the great benefits of the land sale in Teton County was that if the state sold the land, it bypassed the planning and zoning and the other functions of the local government. I don't think that would be our intent either. So I think that this bill actually needs some sideboards, and I'd like to work with the sponsor to develop those sideboards. I'd also like a copy of that report, and I appreciate it. I had not seen that report, and I'd very much like to see it. Those are some current concerns I have. I hope they're addressed as this bill moves along.
Go ahead.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And, folks, I share the concerns that are just described, but, you know, almost never is the highest and best use for property going to be a governmental use. And yet we find ourselves in many instances having to acquire property for governmental purposes and back paying high value because the places where we're rendering those services require us to pay somebody else's market, not our market. If we were building a new capital complex, it was a brand new complex, we'd probably move it out of town where it's $10 an acre, but not 10, but a low price. And here we find ourselves having to replace property to operate our facilities and paying what is the highest and best use, which is a commercial use. And yet we know over 200 years, or the next 100 or 200 years, and this capital's already been here a long time, that we're going to need more space. And when you begin to look at where government has its properties located throughout the state, in many instances, the property was acquired by size and location for strategic purpose for governmental use. And a concern that you begin to cast off these properties only to find yourself having to replace it at a much higher value because the then value is a commercial value, that's very difficult. And government needs space to operate, and almost never is government able to plan to sell at the high and buy at the low, and we end up selling at the lowest values and buying at the highest values, sort of the nature of the business. If you are casting off property that was strategically acquired for a purpose, then you ought to begin to look at how do you replace it at that time with another governmental strategic property. So I think maybe we have to look at the specific properties that have been identified, but if we're going to get in the business of highest and best use, and that's when we're going to buy and sell governmental lands, it gets pretty expensive.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll try to answer some of the questions and concerns. And we had a lot of discussion about the very point you bring up, and there was no intention, if a strategic plan of a particular department had a use for that land, and it was in their planning. And that's why, if you look at the language on page 2, line 8, we say that the land's not directly utilized for department purposes that our managers associated with the institutions. If there's a better way to make that stronger so we can, in fact, solidify and take care of your concerns, I'm all for that. There's no intention to go out there and sell land that, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now there may be used for even 10 or 15. But I will tell you that some of these institutional lands that we have, there's just another use. And when you look at the size of them, and I would talk about particularly the Honor Farm in Riverton, where you've got a lot of acreage there, and it's being utilized for cattle, and it sits right next to a very prime piece of commercial land, and they have plenty of land to do what they do. But you still have that provision in there, and let's don't forget that the Board of Land Commissioners decides. All we're going to do is put the implementing legislation out there that if you want to, in fact, look at that, and you think there is a better use for it than what's going on, and it does not harm the departments or the institution's purposes for what their manager associated with, then take a look at some other use, and that's the purpose of it. As far as the zoning requirements, I could be wrong on this, and I'll be glad if this bill moves forward to look further, but if a piece of ground that was agricultural exempt and was using to feed cattle, and then in fact that is sold, and then it's sold to the highest bidder, which is what it would have to be done and sold in that manner, then if they in fact want to do something with that piece of ground, commercial use, residential, they've got to go through the same zoning requirements anyone else would have to. That should not change that.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 90, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 91.
Senate File 91, County Commissioners Election to Modify Numbers, sponsored by Senator Hines, an act relating to county commission composition. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 91, County Commissioners, Election to Modify Numbers. For I think there's a standing committee amendment, isn't there? No, there's not. Okay. For an explanation of this bill, I would yield to the bill's sponsor, the good senator from Campbell County.
Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, this bill is to correct a problem that we have in our current statute that has created problems in one or more counties. And what it addresses is the area where we where a petition is allowed to increase or decrease the number of county commissioners in a county. And what this bill will do is straighten up the current election where we avoid the problems that we have had in the past. What the current law allows this proposition to be submitted to the electors at May, August, or November. And petitions have been forward, and then before they were formally voted on, other petitions to change that was forward again. So it created a lot of problems. This issue came to the Corporation Committee during our interim. We looked at it and discussed it with county clerks, and at that time, we didn't come upon a simple, straightforward answer to the problems. So what I did, I told the county clerks that if they could come up with a solution, I would try to help them modify this law. What this law would now do, according to Senate File 91, would the petition and filing period and all that would be the same. But when the petition was presented, it could not be voted on until the next general election. Therefore, you would know at that time whether you was increasing or decreasing your county commissioners. The bill also provides a form where for the petition to be gathered, you need the signature, the printed name and the resident address and the dates that the petition was being circulated and for those that signed. The big important part of this is that then when the petition gathered the correct number and we presented to the county clerk, that county clerk would put it on the ballot at the next general election. And the people would vote on it. And then if they chose, the petition was to increase the numbers from 3 to 5, well, then they would not vote for the 2 extra commissioners until the next general election. It slows up the process a little, but it eliminates the confusion of having more than one petition presented at the same time. And for the decrease in numbers of county commissioners, if a petition was calling to return to 3 from 5, the procedure would work the same way. The petition would be collected and presented, and then it would, if the votes, the signature qualified, it would be presented at the next general election. This does not, there was a handout going out just so you can follow how the increase and the decrease would come about. It does not disturb the terms of the incumbents. And that way either up or down, they would fulfill their elected obligation, and at that point is when the petition would change. And of course, they would be allowed to run for re-election if they chose. It's a area that I don't think when the law was originally set up that we thought it out of the problems that it could create, and it did create some, so this is the attempt to correct them. So I'll try to answer any questions and ask for your support.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 91, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 91 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 115.
Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendment, sponsored by Senator Nutting, and Act relating to Child and Adult Protective Services. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Byrne, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a fuller explanation of the bill, I would ask that you call on the Senator, who is certainly more attractive than you are, at your desk.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Senator Nutting.
Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments, comes to you as a result of diligence from one of our state boards, that is the Department of Family Services, or one of our state departments, the Department of Family Services. They have worked very hard to keep their statutes current, the statutes that relate to them, and to follow the statutes exactly. So I congratulate the department for that diligence. The first change that they're requesting in the statute is reflected in the bill on line 17 of page 1. And that is, it states beginning on line 15, within 24 hours after notification of a suspected case of child abuse or neglect, initiate an investigation or assessment. They want to scratch the word verification at that time, and so that it just follows that they are investigating and assessing in order to verify. The verification process starts at the very beginning and continues throughout. It is not a separate step. They verify everything as they go. So it just more accurately reflects their current practice. The second change is on page 3, which is within the statute of child abuse or neglect, statewide reporting center documentation costs and admissibility thereof. What they're wanting to add there is the word assessment or, so that it is assessment or investigation. And the reasons for that is that assessment and investigation go together. The assessment is always part of the investigation, and the investigation continues, so that also more accurately reflects what they're actually doing. Then the third change is in definition of a substantiated report, and they want to change there the wording of credible evidence to a preponderance of the evidence. By that change gives it the appropriate standard and makes it consistent with the standard set forth in 3520-106 with regard to filing of a petition, so that again reflects the standard that is appropriate and the standard that they are following. With that, are there any questions?
Thank you, Senator Nutting. Any questions or discussion on Senate File 115? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering why the word exist was stricken on 17. I'm trying to read this through and see whether, taking that word out, we have the same meaning of the paragraph in whole.
Any more questions before the sponsor responds? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and this may be a question for the real attorneys in the body, it appears to me that the primary change this particular bill makes is to change the evidentiary standard. Used to be to establish that credible evidence of the alleged abuse exists. Now it's established by preponderance of the evidence, the alleged abandonment. That does appear to be a change in the evidentiary standard, and I'm not quite sure what the practical effect of that is, and would like to inquire of the attorneys what difference is that change going to make.
Thank you, Senator Scott. I see no attorney standing. I now see an attorney standing. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way I read the language in the previous language was a lower standard and didn't require an evaluation of all the facts. It simply said, is there a credible statement that the event took place? The new language now requires preponderance of the evidence, which caused an overall evaluation. So even if you get a credible claim, you'd have to look at the response and other materials. So the earlier standard was an easier standard to substantiate. The new one is a tougher standard, requires an overall evaluation and then a determination that preponderance, that is more likely than not, it happened.
Senator Perkins.
And just to add on, the good majority of voters is exactly right. And what credible evidence is really, it's a placeholder. It's on the kind of the nature of probable cause. And so it's a placeholder, knowing that later on, if in this case, the agencies, if they're going to substantiate the claim, they'll have to meet the preponderance of evidence later on. Preponderance of evidence then is the actual standard or proof that the agency would have to show that the abuse or neglect had occurred. So I'll just add that on to, which is just seconding, essentially, in a little bit more detail of what I believe the majority floor leader just said.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 13, it says the local child protective agency. I have a question. Are they the only ones that can commission this case or initiate the investigation, or can a sheriff or a police chief or a police department or somebody or a emergency room doctor or somebody initiate this, or are they the only ones that can do that?
Senator Nutting?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll address Senator Barnard's question first. No, there are other agencies that can do that. The sheriff and law enforcement agencies could also do that. But this statute just relates to what the Department of Family Services does. So they aren't trying to set statute for some other agency. To answer the question about the word exists, if you leave out the dependent clause, the credible or now it's by a preponderance of the evidence, if you leave that out and you go back to the earlier part of the statement, you have to establish the alleged abandonment, abuse, exploitation, intimidation, or neglect. And I think then it makes sense without the word exists. I'm getting kind of a frown.
It's a good frown.
Then the statements that were offered by our lawyers to talk about credible evidence moved to preponderance of the evidence. I'm so glad we have lawyers because I think they stated it very well.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nutting. Any further discussion? Any further discussion on Senate File 115? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Was there any discussion about the fiscal note? Because we're increasing the work by increasing the from going from credible evidence to preponderance of evidence. And I'm assuming that there's going to have to be more investigation or more time's going to have to be spent on each one of these to get to that higher level. So did the department offer any reason why they had enough people there to already do this job, even though it was more work, or was there any testimony at all about the fiscal note?
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Family Services have already been investigating very thoroughly, and my understanding is that they can meet this level of preponderance of evidence without any increased staff.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think actually this might actually help them manage the change in the standard, may actually help them manage their workload initially. And just in a little sidebar with the majority of Florida, we were discussing this. And I think what may have happened over time is initially your first response is we need to investigate every report of child abuse to make sure that it's happened. And I think what's happened over time, I know we've discussed this on the floor on previous occasions, that a lot of people make reports of child abuse for lots of reasons. Sometimes people are unbalanced. Sometimes it's to gain advantage in a child custody or divorce proceeding. And so there's lots of reasons that people make those. And I think over time the agency's probably figured out that you may get a credible report from a crazy person, and that shouldn't rise to the level of substantiated report. And so this actually may be able to look at that, and then they can exercise some experience and professional judgment in determining which of those reports should be substantiated and the proceedings go forward by raising that standard. So I think that the fiscal note would make sense. I don't think it's more work. I think what we're doing is probably allowing them to do more efficient work.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Senator Escobar.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the good senator from Natrona County in terms of the efficiency and the effectiveness of child protection services, but I can just about guarantee that just about the time that you get a report that is pretty vague and not too much in there, and it could be one of these custody type issues or what have you, is that something dangerously wrong will happen, and protective services will be crucified because they did not investigate. Just the nature of the beast. So I just throw that as a cautionary statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion. Further discussion on Senate File 115. Seeing no and hearing call for the question. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 115, say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 115 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 124. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senator Peterson.
Please have the floor.
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, it's not often, Madam Chairman and colleagues, that I get to stand up and introduce people that have come clear from the north end of our state, but today in the gallery we have with us the Northwest College nursing students from Northwest College there in Powell. This is the nursing class of 2013, and they've come down with their instructor, Chris Brewer. She's an RN, and our class president, Jessica Kinsley. If they'd stand up and would like to welcome them to the Senate, they're here to watch us work. There they are. Hey.
Well, welcome, nurses from your part of the state. I was delighted to be able to have lunch with you today, and so I welcome you to the Senate. Senator Kraft. Yes, you may.
Thank you. We don't want the North to outdo the South, because we have nurses, too. And nursing instructors, and we're very, very proud of them. Please welcome to the Senate floor our nursing students from Western Wyoming Community College, their instructor Marlene Ethier, and is Kathy up there too? No, but Marlene Ethier and the students from Western Wyoming.
Well, welcome. Nursing students from the West also. We are feeling very protected today. Thank you for being here. Okay, will the reading clerk continue with the reading, please?
Senate File 124, Frivolous Liens, sponsored by Senator Perkins, an act relating to liens. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Excuse, Senator Burns, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I move it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 124, Frivolous Liens. Madam Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
Senate File 124, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 7.
Madam Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 124, and I would yield to Senator Perkins to deal with both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, what we've got before you today is a bill on Senate File 124, Frivolous Liens. If we can, what I'd like to do is see if we can just deal with the Standing Committee Amendment, which are really kind of some clarification, and I don't believe are particularly substantive amendments, but we'll deal with those first, then we can go to the bill. What we're doing in the amendment is we're simply trying to clarify. Sometimes we use a few many two pronouns and other things. We refer to the petitioner, but as you go through the bill, there can be a couple different meanings for petitioner. So what we're doing is just trying to clarify to make sure that we know when we refer back to the provisions in there who's doing what at which point in time. And so we're trying to be a little more precise in the language that we find in the Standing Committee Amendment. And so, for example, we want to make sure that the affidavit that we're talking about on page 3 at line 7, when we refer to an affiant is the person who makes the affidavit, so we're making sure we're talking about that person as opposed to a petitioner. And also when we talk about stricken release, the point is to nullify or void the lien, and so we're just trying to clarify that stricken and release in this context would be null and void, of no further force or effect. And then again, on page 5, line 4, we're just trying to clarify that so when we know which person, using the word affiant as the person who made the affidavit, is a little bit more precise than the word petitioner. And that's all the amendment does. And unless there's questions on that, I'd like to call for that, and when we can go through the bill and we can talk about the bill.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 124, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt the standing committee amendment to Senate File 124 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What we've got before you in this bill is an extension or expansion of the frivolous lien statute that already exists. And the reason I've been bringing this bill is at the request of a local municipality in my neck of the woods, Madam Chairman. What's happened up there is we've got some situations where, after many years of code enforcement issues, this is an example of how they arise, and they can certainly arise in other instances, but after many years of code enforcement issues at both the county and the city level, finally there was enforcement action undertaken, and as they went through and cleaned up, then there were liens for the value of the cleanup of property established on the property that was in violation. Ultimately, those weren't paid. After several years, the county finally foreclosed its lien on the property. There were a number of hearings and many opportunities for the owner to step in or to do something to show some ability to work with after, many years and many opportunities that were wasted, that the property was foreclosed. And what's happened in that is that there's been individuals that are starting to file affidavits of entitled, I have an example here, it's entitled Affidavit of Commercial Lien Statement. And so they go in, and who's got listed in the lien statement is everybody who has anything to do, or ever have to do in their official capacity, for the most part, with this, among those who are named are the governor of our state, the secretary of our state, the attorney general, members of the Wyoming Supreme Court, the clerk of the district court of our county, our local sheriff, all of the Natrona County Commission. Interestingly, most of the time they were named in their capacity, the individual judge who sat on this, the district court judge who ruled over it, was named not in his official capacity, but just his name was given. We have the county attorney, all of the city of Casper council members, the municipality police department, the code enforcement individuals, the city manager, the bishops who the people who showed up and bid at the foreclosure sale, all of those individuals were named. The attorneys who represented those individuals were named. And so, anyway, long story short, there was these liens that are attached not on the property, Madam Chairman, but to these individuals' homes and to their property. And so what we've attempted, and then the other interesting development has happened is, as individuals have now been, they've undertaken the action to try and remove these liens from these individuals, and what the new strategy has been to go ahead and now every judge who assumes or takes up the case to do this has a lien filed against them. And ultimately, by extension, you could end up with a situation where each judge is now named in the lien, they are now conflicted out of the case, can't sit or rule on the case, and it goes to the next one, and ultimately you could ultimately disqualify every judge in the state by simply naming them as liens. So anyway, what we're trying to do, and that's the evil we're trying to get to. So what we did in this bill is there's already an ability to remove frivolous liens in the statute. What we've done is we've tried to leave that intact and provide a little bit different or alternative method, which is very close to the method anyone else would have, but to provide for, and you see the guts of the bill are on page 3. What we're doing here is any federal, state, or local official or employee whose real or personal property is the subject of a recorded claim of lien, who believes the claim of the lien is invalid, under this section, can file an affidavit with the county clerk stating the claim of lien has been filed against him in his individual capacity for the performance or non-performance of his duty. So what we're doing is a city councilman, a county commissioner, a judge, a county attorney can come in and file an affidavit that states that he believes that this lien has been filed against him while acting as an individual capacity, not in his representative capacity or his employment capacity, and not against him as an individual. In doing that, then, it would, within 30 days, having done that, after you file that affidavit, the lien claimant, the individual who filed the lien, has 30 days then to file a petition in the court to overcome or to contest that lien. Once that's done, there's a process for a quick hearing, which I believe is the same timeline as available to any other citizen in our state, where within between, which is on the top of page 4, sometime once the petition is served, that the judge has to set a hearing within 6 and not later than 15 days, which is the same that's available in the existing statute to regular folks. And then from that point in time, it's basically like an order to show cause, meaning the lien claimant has to show up and prove up his lien. If through that due process hearing, the claimant has a valid claim, valid lien claim, then it stays on. If not, then the judge can order that can void the lien and enter an order doing that. So that's what we're trying to do. In addition to that, it allows the person who's had to go to the expense and trouble of scraping off a frivolous lien is allowed to recover damages and attorney's fees. Damages are assumed to be if you don't prove up your damages, you're entitled to at least $1,000 in damages. That's the exact same remedy that's available to regular citizens. So we're not cutting a special deal. The intent certainly wasn't to cut any more or better special deal for these individuals than are available to regular citizens, but simply to provide them the opportunity when they're acting in their official capacity to provide them some protection and get these liens off and hopefully avoid that abuse that we're finding. And that's the intent. Urge your favorable consideration, and I'll stand for questions, and I understand I do have some coming.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is with respect to right now in subsection B of the statute, we have a process for allowing the elimination of the lien. And so the description was that this alternative, this subparagraph D provides, I think, an alternative second way to cause or force the lien to be removed. I'm still not understanding what is the difficulty or the deficiency in existing B, but having said that, I guess I still don't understand why you would need a new subsection D when B already applies. Now, when we passed subsection B, it was for the exact problem that was described, and the language on top of page 2-1 that's being asked to be stricken was left in there intentionally because the folks that are filing some of these bogus liens believe they're valid, and you shouldn't have to challenge whether they're forged or otherwise. They're simply invalid. Now, under subsection B, we have an accelerated process, and the intent of the accelerated process was if you're a judge, for example, and you have one of these bogus liens filed on all your property, and you went to sell it, or you're buying a piece of property, you've got this lien, and you've only got, say, 20 or 30 days to go to closing, you need a mechanism to get those liens off more quickly. And so subsection B was intentionally designed as a fast track to get these things removed. Now you've got an alternative D, which looks to me like you're slowing it down, you're giving notice to the lien claimant, giving them 30 days to respond. You've missed your closing by now. And so I guess I'm not certain what it is that was why you would soften the language on the top of page 2 by eliminating that language that was put in intentionally and then offering a second alternative that's actually a slower process, giving more due process to the bogus lien holder.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I believe... The only difference between the two processes is whether or not you have to have a hearing. In the process that's in the bill before you is you can file the affidavit, Madam Chairman, and if there's not a response, then the lien is deemed void. And so in B, in the additional subsection B, what you do is if you file the affidavit in response, you don't have to have a hearing. And so you can do that route. Under B, you file the petition to scrape off the lien, and you have to have the hearing. Now, the individual may not show up, and there may be a default, but ultimately that's the differences between the two. We've worked this, this was brought to the individual who worked on this with was the city attorney. We've gone back and forth and moved that around some, but that's the difference, and you know, that's good or bad, that's the answer.
Mr. Vice President. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I guess that's a great explanation. My concern is, though, you still have a require, if you can do it in the process without requiring a court order, you'll eliminate a hearing. But if you, any time that you get the court involved and actually require the initiation of an order, the court walk into the court says, well, I'm going to have a hearing unless I can show some mechanism to enter a default. So I think you've actually complicated it, and you've stretched it out. You've given due process. One hearing, one person, the guy shows up and says, "Hey, I think I got a valid lien, even though it's bogus." So I think if we're as we move this forward, we have to make clear that there are alternative processes. But you're not going to avoid a hearing unless there's a default.
Right. Senator Scott.
This particular practice that being complained of is, I think, very serious and ultimately destructive of our democratic form of government. It gets to be a common way of people fighting against any governmental action they don't like. And if you're the official, you've got to go get an attorney and deal with affidavits and all kinds of things that if you're not an attorney, you don't understand about. We're going to have a lot of trouble getting people to run for these kind of offices, particularly county commission, city council, which doesn't pay very well and is a lot of work, things like that. My question, Madam Chairman, is, and I understand this bill wouldn't carry such a thing, but why didn't we also make the filing of these bogus liens a high misdemeanor or something like that to try to put a stop to the practice?
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I had a couple of questions. And as I understand, the existing law talks about a person. And now we're further defining that as either federal, state, or local official or employee. I just wanted to know if there was any conflicts there. And then where would we fit? We be in the legislature. I would assume we're a state official.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I'll go through the questions that I think are easy, and I'll leave the other ones to somebody else. The first question was on the point of the hearing. First of all, the amount of time, the 6 days or 15 days, that they're exactly the same. But the discussion was on this: if the person filing the lien doesn't show up, then it's automatic. I mean, and that was the intent. Given the fact that you're talking about public officials, if the guy filing the bogus lien does show up, then there will be a court hearing. I think that's prudent. You're talking about public officials, whether it can be the judge, it can be, I don't know, the sheriff, or all those people that get drawn into this stuff. You have to conduct that in public. It has to be done exactly right because they are vulnerable to accusations, particularly from some of the elements that file these bogus claims. They're not wackos, but they're cousins. And so that's the deal on the hearing, is we want to keep it above board, where people can see it. In terms of where the legislature stands, we didn't discuss that, but just off the cuff, if you're in leadership, you're liable. If you're one of us troopers, we defer to the leadership, I think, is the way we do that.
They went that way.
You went that way.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I think the... I think what we're missing then in this process is that on lines 28 through, or 20 to 22, you had to think of this from the title company page 3. So you're thinking about this, the title company, if we may want to consider, ask the sponsor to consider whether or not you say, look, if a petition is not filed, well, if you're the title company, you see the affidavit, and then you're going to have to search all over the state for petitions. So we need to have a mechanism where there can be either a second affidavit filed that terminates it. So if the notion is that somehow we're going to have a self-executing process where we say, I file the affidavit, the bogus lien holder, you tell them you need to come in and file yourself the petition. Then there's got to be another mechanism to confirm that so the title company can come in and write policy over. So I see what you're wanting. You want to shift the burden to the other parties to file it. But if you do that, you have to have a second affidavit to say, hey, it's done, or some way for the title company to confirm, because otherwise the title company, there's no way for them to ever know. And that's the importance of the order. So if you don't provide, and maybe summarize this, if there's no provision for a court order early, you haven't solved your problem, because the title company is not going to write off the lien based upon an affidavit without a final order or some other executing mechanism, because they wouldn't know where to look for a filed petition. If we solve that problem, it'll work, I think.
That's one of the reasons why this is such a great process. You know, individually we can make lots of boneheaded errors, but together we can occasionally come with a good work product. So thank you, and I'll be happy to visit with the good majority floor leader, and we'll get that lined out. And if there's no other questions, I'll just ask for let's move this thing forward, and we'll get it spiffed up a little bit, Madam Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 124, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 124 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Yes, Senator Burns. Yes, you may.
Madam Chair, when it comes to nursing students, you've been introduced to the rest. Now you're going to meet the best. We've got nursing students and faculty and the director from Sheridan College down here, Phyllis Puckett, faculty member Judy McDowell, and then we have students, Jessica Kelly, Lauren Jones, and Heidi Kenyon in the South Balcony. Please make them feel welcome to the Senate.
Well, I welcome the best.
Where's the LCCC?
Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 126. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File Number 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles, sponsored by Senator Schiffer, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Van Flatern?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles. And to explain this bill to us, I call upon the senior senator from KC.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I bring this bill. Let me give you a little bit of background. The example or what brought this, right now we're importing a lot of hay because of the drought. It's coming in from wherever, Canada, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, wherever it comes from. When they bring this hay in, hay is quite expensive, but because of the size and the shape. Quite often, these loads can haul more hay than what they can actually load on the truck because of the weight restrictions or size restrictions. And what this does is puts in place a method so that when disasters like this happen, the governor has the authority to waive some of those restrictions. It can be weight, it can be size of the load, those types of things. Similar to what the governor did this summer. This will now make, we're addressing that very situation. And I'll go right through the bill on page one. We talk about permits for certain highways to carry overweight and oversized vehicles. And here we go in, it can be greater weight, greater size, and the number of vehicles that are given in this article, if it has been determined by the governor, and that's the new language, that's what the bill's all about, that a situation of economic hardship exists, or general welfare of the state, or any other, or another state. So that's really the nuts and bolts of the bill. We know it works because the governor issued one of these last summer, so we know it works. We did check on all these, and it really does need to be in statute. It was kind of uneven. The complaints precisely. In some cases, depending on which port you came in, some ports were much easier than others. Some of them, and this particularly goes, for example, to round bales, where the tonnage is lighter, and so if you load them to get your tonnage, you're probably too high. Or, and this is not the fault of the state, sometimes those bales were not sound enough to be hauled the distances they were being held. But we did look at every single complaint. There were actually very few. Less than 10% of the loads actually had something wrong with them. Now, and I find this interesting, one load was stopped at a specific port because his oversized load sign was muddy. But there again, he drove into a meadow to load the hay. I mean, most times it worked. And now it'll be legal. So that's what this is all about. It's really a straightforward bill to promote the well-being and welfare of the state of Wyoming. Well, actually, it is a true benefit, seriously, in this time of drought.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I would really urge your passage of this bill. By coincidence or whatever, I could show you an email that I got yesterday from a constituent who'd been hauling hay from one of our northern neighbors, and they have been repeatedly tied up at a northern port, and there's really quite a hassle in regard to what the current regulation is. And he says, I need some help, it's costing me money, and a lot of other unfortunate circumstances. I picked up a call, I called a not the governor, but a person in a high place, and I'm still kind of waiting to see how this has been reconciled. But I think a bill like this would be really, really helpful given the circumstances of the drought and the demand that's being put upon the hay here in Wyoming. And in my opinion, if you talk with my family and other people in my district, it's truly an emergency. So I can't say how strongly I support this bill. I'll let you know the outcome from which I speak.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I'm in between a rock and a hard place on this because I'm a hay producer in Wyoming. And so here we are picking winners and losers. But I want to say is that I'll get behind you guys and we'll take one for the team that will be there for you on this one because, you know, we do need to get these outside resources in here. But let's try not to abuse this because There are situations where you have a lot of hay producers up in the Fremont County area and a lot of hay producers all over the state. And we know that we need to help our neighbors, and we're willing to help our neighbors. But, you know, if this is something that's going to go on in times when an emergency is that one rain cloud doesn't show up over one part of the country, then, you know, we just want to make sure that we know that we don't abuse this. But I think it's a good thing. We had a lot of good meetings in the Douglas area and other areas during this drought thing, and I think we've had a lot of Wyoming neighbors helping out Wyoming neighbors, and now we get to have the Canadians get into it with us. So, but we need to realize is that when we import this hay in here, is that it's going to come in with some other things that might not be too good. So, make sure that we inspect those loads for bad weeds.
Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, thank you very much. I'd like to stand in favor of a great bill from the great senator from KC. This is really makes a lot of sense. I can concur with the senator from Douglas. I spent quite a little time with the head of the Department of Yellow Pickups visiting about trucks that were stopped at our local port, had to unload hay 6 inches too high. It really impeded this year. It cost ranchers money. It cost truckers money. And not out-of-state trucking firms. This was outfits from in-state that were doing a lot of the hauling. This is a hardship, and it was a hardship on them. You had ranchers waiting on hay that were having a hard time getting it, and it raises the price to them in a time that this is a historic price height that has ever been. I would really encourage you to pass this as much as you can. I don't think it will ever be abused. The ports are very careful about this, and they'll be pushed back any time it comes. It'll only be used, I'm quite positive, in emergency situations. But I spent my share of time with the governor's office and otherwise to find out that we couldn't change rules. And this is something we need flexibility on, that we got the right guy that can do it. So I'd encourage you to vote for it. And thank you.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I'm going to reach back in my legislative memory here, but on page 1, line 15, we changed given in this section to given in this article. When we do that, one of the things we pick up is 3118802 IVA, no combination of vehicles shall consist of more than three single vehicles. I think that's the triple trailer prohibition. And I'm a little nervous that we are backdoor finding a mechanism to evade that if some governor in the future thinks those are a good thing and we're creating an economic hardship by not allowing them in. And the population had considerable, our voters had considerable to say about that a few years ago. And I think the current law is eminently satisfactory to most of the people here. And I think the bill is important, but I wonder if we need to take precautions to make sure we aren't putting in a loophole that can evade that particular prohibition.
Senator Bernard.
Madam Chairman, I'm assuming here with these overweight and overlength vehicles that they can damage the road. Is this what we're talking about? They're gonna damage the roads, and if they do damage the roads, who will be responsible for paying that? The individual or the state? And which director are we talking about? The DOT or who's gonna okay this?
Senator Schiffer.
And I will check more closely on the situation with triple trailers. If it brings those in, that was not the intent of this. And we can take care of that on second reading. In terms of damage to roads, the reason that we have weight limits is to try and at least control the damage to our roads. Overweight vehicles, very heavy vehicles, can damage roads. But again, the qualifications are that it be an emergency situation for the hardship exists or the general welfare of the state of Wyoming. Is it going to happen a lot? No, it probably isn't. The director of WIDOT, of the Department of Transportation, can issue these. And what this bill does, the director can issue them now. But what we are saying in this bill, that now in addition to the director of WIDOT, the governor will be able to issue them. So it's there'll be two people that can issue them. I think we need that. The governor is very responsive to, in this case, the needs of the people that needed hay because of the drought. And there may be other situations that arise. He may hear about them where the director of WIDOT may not hear about them.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 126, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 126 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 127. Excuse me. Senator Landon.
Madam Chairman, we've met some future nurses here today. I'd like to introduce you to the future nurses who will be supervising those shifts of other nurses. They come to us from Casper College. Some of our instructors are here. So please meet those future RNs and supervisors of shifts.
Well, welcome to the Senate. We just keep getting more and more influential people. Senator Hastert? Oh, no. Okay, the reading clerk will read Senate File 127.
Senate File 127, Lien Notice, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to liens. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, excuse Senator Burns, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, any of the whole rise to report. I move it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 127, Lien Notice. Madam Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. And I would ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 127. Second reading amendment number 1, page 2, lines 5 and 6, a delete Schiffer, Chairman.
Madam Chairman, I will go ahead and move the amendment. Do you want to go through the bill first? And I'll yield the floor to the majority floor leader.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The bill in front of you is intended to correct a problem that we inadvertently created in 2010 when we redeveloped or rewrote our lien statutes. Historically, to have a valid lien, you really needed two things. Of course, you have to provide the materials, those sorts of things. But if you've had provided materials and you weren't paid, you're working on a building, there are really two elements to get your lien become valid. One is you would give notification to the owner that you weren't paid. And then it used to be within 10 days, now within 20 days of that notification. And prior to the expiration of the lien period, you had to file a notice or the actual lien in the county records on the real estate records. Once you filed that, then you have 6 months to foreclose on it if you're the lien claimant. If you don't foreclose on it, then the lien automatically expires. What happened during the last iteration in a conference committee towards at the very last conference, a new section was added in that said, once you have perfected your lien, go ahead and give a notification to the lien holder or to the owner that the lien was filed. It was really a courtesy element because the perfection of the lien is described in the first paragraph that says the lien is perfected when your lien is filed prior to the expiration of the lien period of time. Now, once you file it, of course, the owner has constructive notice of your filing, because if he just goes down and looks at his real estate records, he'll see that there's a lien record. Well, it's fair enough to go ahead and, as a courtesy, after the lien has been perfected, to provide notification to the owner and said, by the way, we did what we told you we're going to do. We filed the lien. The difficulty is that it says here that it's supposed to be done within 5 days. Well, if you've ever gone down and filed a lien or on property, what you're going to find out is the process is you take your lien, you present it to the clerk, and they put it in a pile, and you don't know necessarily when they are going to get it filed. It might be a day or 2 days, and if you happen to hit during the Christmas holidays, you can call each and every day, and same person will say, well, we'll get to it next week, we'll get to it next week. And then on Tuesday of the following week, they said, oh, you know, we actually had time, we filed it last Thursday. And now your 5 days is gone. So we've done two things in this bill. One is to say you have 30 days to make sure that you have plenty of time to mail it in to the clerk. And you're talking about the recorded lien. You get it recorded, then you mail the owner and said, hey, we did what we told you to do. It's been filed. And the second thing we do is we make clear that this is over on page 2, lines 5 through 6, that this notification does not, if you fail to miss the 30 days, if you're a day or two late, it doesn't invalidate the lien. The validation of your lien is controlled by getting a perfected lien filed within the original lien period. So that part of what we're trying to do is not create traps for the unwary along the way. There are really two traps. One is you have to give 20 days prior notice, and you have to do that well enough ahead of time to make sure that you have your lien filed before the expiration. So that's the purpose of the bill. With respect to the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, I'd ask that you vote no. This is one, I think I could have explained it, but I was off cleaning roadkill, I think, and missed the meeting, and I apologize to the chairman. But what the committee was proposing to do is eliminate lines 5 and 6 on page 2, and they did not have the explanation. But the explanation is pretty simple, and that is there are two things that determine the validity: the pre-notification, the 20 days, and the filing before the lien expiration. And to say that if you do all those, but you inadvertently forget to send notification, and that's going to invalidate your lien, that makes no sense. It's one more trap for the unwary. And by this time, the lien has been recorded, so they can go down and find it as well as anybody else. Obviously, if you don't foreclose in 6 months, it's going to expire on its own. So for that reason, I'd ask that you vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? Excuse me, Senator Schiffer.
I would consider a no vote to be a friendly vote in this case.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
The motion to adopt Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 127 has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Rothfuss.
Chairman, I did just have a question, actually, at that point. I can see why the committee came up with the concern, because you have a shall statement on page 1, line 12, and then you basically say, but if you don't, no big deal, on page 2, lines 5 and 6. So I'm curious why, with lines 5 and 6 in existence, anyone would ever really feel obligated to file.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I guess I really need some explanation about the 30 days on page 2 as far as notice of satisfaction that the debt is paid and satisfied. You know, when you're from time to time you're changing the financial arrangements that you have on your property, and that would seem to me would slow up the process as you're going from one lender to another lender, or possibly could. It's kind of a courtesy, I think, to the person borrowing money on the property that they'd have that notice that they could take with them. Of course, I suppose they could always go down and see whether the lien had been removed at the courthouse, but a lot of times those things don't get done anyway, and people just neglect to take them off, and that causes a problem, too.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I'm going to go back into the answers. With respect to the issue on the notice of satisfaction, a separate statute requires that you file it within 5 days. So the filing takes place within 5 days. Now, the issue is that we are providing courtesy notice to everybody that it's been done. And the way the same thing happens, if I take it down to the clerk, I present it on the fourth day, but the clerk may sit, it'll sit in the stack for sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 days. So I've filed it, but it doesn't get the recording information. What you want is when I send it to you, say, by the way, here's the recorded copy, and you've got it for your record. But I oftentimes don't get those recorded copies back for weeks because, they go to the clerk's office, they get them filed, they have to record them. Once they're recorded, then they put it in the mail, and you might not see it for several weeks. But the filing, it has to be done in 5 days, and that's this other section. This is just notification that I did what I told you I was supposed to do. With respect to my colleague from Albany County, people do comply with the statutes, but we're always talking about the issue of validity versus invalidity. And folks, when you're, this is an area that if you are a contractor, there are a bunch of hurdlers that you have, and if you provided those services and the owner has an opportunity to protect you to make sure that the payments are not paid to the general contractor, if you're a subcontractor, they should do that. And if things don't work out, this shouldn't be a series of traps that trap one, trap two, trap three, trap four, and you just lost the value of all your electrical equipment, your plumbing equipment, or if you provide the carpentry work. I forgot to send you notification. When those notifications, all the owner has to do is walk down to the courthouse, and he can see that it was filed. And in the question with my colleague from in the green coat, money, money, money. With respect to that issue, once again, if you're the owner, you walk down and you can see whether it's been filed. So if you're closing, you'll know. You may know that it got filed before I do. If you're watching the daily record, or your title company's watching and seeing it get filed, so you can go down and see it. This is simply a courtesy notice that. If you don't get it, it's an easy way to verify it one way or the other.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have the fortune or the misfortune, as it was several years ago, to work on the lien rewrite that we did, and those of us who are here remember that, and it was a long process. So a ton of work was then in the interim as we went back on the lien process. And the concept that we approached that with in the end was, we wanted to try and create a situation where a contractor, just the regular Joe on the street, could file a lien, particularly like specifically a material man or contractor's lien, could file a lien without necessarily having to hire an attorney. And so when we did that, we tried to set up a fairly even-handed process that eliminated a number of traps for the unwary. We provided a statutory lien notice so that basically if you print the one that's off in the statute,
a contractor or individual could, if they filled in the blanks and followed the instructions, could probably file a lien and probably get it effective without the use of a lawyer, knowing that ultimately if you ever foreclose a lien, you're probably going to have to retain an attorney at that point. But we wanted to try and eliminate, Madam Chairman, the traps for the unwary that were there, because there still are, and there were many, many. There's not quite as many now, but we still find some. And I think that when we do this, you know, you look at it, back in mind, I'm sure it's already been said that, you know, there's been a notice, you have to, it's required that you give the 10-day notice you're going to file the lien. You have to give that, or your lien's going to be invalid. Then you file the lien, and now this is the notice that comes back afterwards. And for us to lay that trap out there for a guy whose job is to pour cement or to finish carpentry work or to provide other services, it might even be an adjuster's lien for you to do on livestock or other things like that, to create that trap for the common guy out there. You know, I don't expect anybody in here, Madam Chairman, to have sympathy on lawyers, but I would hope that they would look and recognize that this isn't about lawyers. This is about getting paid for the services you do, and we shouldn't have this trap in there. And I think it was a good catch by the good senator from Albany County.
All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 127, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 127 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 132.
Senate File 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Driscoll. No, Senator Kraft, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the sponsor, the Senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm pleased to bring to you this great little bill. I'll background you just a little on what the bill does, and then we'll talk about how it came about and what it really is. This bill simply allows sportsmen in the state of Wyoming, recreationalists, to use silencers or suppressors to hunt big game the same as we do, or any other species, the same as we do under existing game and fish laws. This really is a pretty simple deal that the same penalties apply, the same things apply. The only difference is they're going to have an extension on their gun that makes it somewhat quieter. And I'll tell you a little something about it. This is a big secret. They really don't silence things. What they do is take the hearing, the noise level from a firearm down to a level that won't damage your hearing. Game can still hear it. Hunters can still hear it. It's at a lower level. You might not hear it three valleys away. So if you're standing at the base of Devil's Tower, you might not hear a gunshot 6 miles away. But you're probably going to be able to hear it within a mile or so. It's a variance of volume of what you hit. And it's really not totally silenced. This deal, we've heard lots back to being silence and things about what they do and they don't do. They aren't like they're in the movies, like we said. They are legal in every western state except for California and Wyoming. They use them for hunting in all those states except for Montana. Montana, you can do varmints and things. All the rest of the states, you can do it. The good senator from up near Jackson showed a little map to you. You've got one laying on your desk. I encourage you to look at it. His had, for the little thumb bill, it had the 4 states that you couldn't do it in. This one has one single state left out here in the middle of it. We can do it in every state surrounding us. You've heard testimony that it's going to encourage poaching, it's going to cause some problems. I testify to you that all of these states now know that this bill is here in Wyoming, and they've got the ability to say it's a problem in their state. We didn't get any word, no testimony, about any problems in any of those states. As far as illegal use of them, anybody can get on their computer. You can build them illegally. To get them legally, it's going to cost you somewhere around $1,000, fingerprints, background investigations, pretty detailed thing, something I don't think someone's going to take a chance on that's going to do it. If you're going to go poach with a silencer, it's probably going to be one you built looking at something like this. These guys go through enough that they're probably pretty law-abiding citizens. The sheriff knows about it. As far as what it does noise-wise, it brings the level down to such a level, like I say, it really won't hurt you. The chart that's in this handout will tell you that it takes the noise from noise that actually damages your hearing to the noise of a loud rock concert. Don't think it's going to be quite getting away with being soundless. The other point we've heard is fair chase again. Animals can hear the suppressors well. It was pointed out in committee, would this stop the dinner bell syndrome we have with bears coming in? Game and Fish said absolutely not. Bears would be able to hear it. It's no problem. This bill makes sense to let Wyoming have the freedoms that all the states around us do. We pride ourselves on what we do and being able to do. Why do we stop ourselves so that we can be like a state over on the coast? That I would stand for questions.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Folks, I'm not really opposed to the substance of this bill, but I am here to at least raise my objection with regards to the process. Folks, we have standing committees for a reason. And we all know that this bill failed in a standing committee in the other House. Now, either they have a function or they don't. But it's not common that we, when a bill fails in one House, to bring it over to this House, or vice versa. That is my only objection. It needs to be raised. I'm all about the process in my objection here, not necessarily to the substance.
Senator Driscoll.
Madam Chairman, rising for a second time, I would like to directly address that. I should have at the start. This was a standing committee bill, absolutely correct. It came out of the TRW committee. Through the summer, we had all the testimony from experts, all the people, went and listened to suppressors, silencers, heard lots about it, came out as a committee bill. In the interim, the House side of the committee lost over half of its members. So we were dealt a new deck of cards, so be it, of people that really hadn't had the full chance to see what this bill really did. And when I realized what had happened, there were some other issues that potentially were there I won't talk about. But when this bill came out pretty fast. Some people didn't get here to make testimony. There were some expert witnesses that didn't make it some stuff. That's their fault, but it didn't happen. At that point in time, I felt like it really didn't get a fair shake. And this was a bill that was a kind of an exception to the rule. And I brought it back as a personal bill because I felt like the evidence was compelling for it, and the reason it failed wasn't because a committee on the other side killed it. They just didn't have a chance to have the same look at what we did on our side of the deal. Our committee's intact with less one person. So I think there's a reason to bring it over here occasionally. With that, I...
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, to elaborate on that a little bit, committee bill, I believe it passed unanimously in the interim committee. The current standing committee over there, I believe, only has two returning members from that committee, and the majority of the committee are freshmen. So it's all due respect to the process. We heard hours of testimony on this particular
bill and this issue, we went out to arrange and fired these weapons and saw them fired and saw them done. All that was an experience that the current committee really couldn't have gone through. And so the good senator thinks that the bill was good enough to bring it back. I thought it was a good enough bill to vote for it, even though the current standing committee on the other side did shoot it down. And also, I think I'm compelled to say that another committee, interim committee that I was on, had its bill that was passed unanimously by interim committee die in the standing committee on the other side on the first meeting of the day. I've brought that bill back. It's gotten through committee, and so that'll be on the floor too. So the fact that it was killed by a standing committee, I think, should not reflect on the value of the bill itself. It may be more of a statement of the inexperience that we may be dealing with from the other side, with all due respect to them.
Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, just a little information and a bit of history. The gentleman that was my range master when I first started in law enforcement and a member of the military and a longtime supporter and instructor at the ranges, both with law enforcement and he did some community work also, is a supporter of this. Not necessarily the bill, we haven't talked specifically of the bill, but of this tool. And his point was, this is a tool you can use at the range for the people who shoot at the ranges. And it increases accuracy, it increases good habits, develops good habits, and so forth. One of the challenges with the law that we have today, if you'll look at your bill on page 2, up at the top on line 2, there's some language that's proposed to be struck, and it says, no person shall take into or possess in the game fields or forests of Wyoming. As has been explained to us in the committee, the game fields of Wyoming are essentially, to a large degree, the outdoors. And so the outdoor ranges in our community and some of the other ranges we've had described to us fall within that place, and so while we're in that description. And so while the letter of the law says you can own them in Wyoming, you just can't take them into the game fields, a number of these outdoor ranges are actually considered in the game fields. And so there's a real bind on being able to use the suppressor either for hunting or just at the ranges and be able to enjoy the reduced recoil, the reduced sound report, and everything that goes along with that. But the law as it stands today really... It's a law that says, oh, you can own one and you can use it, but the only place you may be able to use it, if you got right down to it, is at an indoor range.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I've heard a number of comments from back home from some of my sportsmen who think that this does interfere with the fair chase of the game, that suppresses the sound enough so that it's easier to creep up on game for second shots and things like that. And frankly, I don't know whether it does or doesn't, but I've heard quite a bit of that from back home. I also, Madam Chairman, at our ranch, we give permission to hunt pretty liberally. And frankly, when people are shooting, I like to be able to hear that and have some notion as to where they are, just as a personal safety measure. And I'm concerned as to how much the use of silencers will interfere with that.
Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, I don't believe there's any prohibition in this bill that doesn't allow a landowner to tell folks if they're hunting on their lands, they can't use silencers. It's their lands, so you're king of your castle. I think that if you're looking at that situation, you know, you can definitely tell people that, you know, if you're hunting on my place, you're going to do it the way I say.
Senator Bernard.
Madam Chairman, there are several give people in this audience here in our legislature who wear hearing aids. I am one of them. I think I ruined my hearing from hunting. Several times I didn't know somebody was that close to me. Gun went off. Your ears ring for about a week. And you lose your hearing. I would like to take my grandchildren out and be able to shoot and not have to worry about those my younger grandchildren losing their hearing when they shoot. So I think this is a liberty issue also. You're kind of eliminating my right to hunt by saying I can't use a suppressor. If any of you have gone hunting, you can muffle the sound. You can use hearing aids like this, or you put on these little muffle things on there. And if it's cold or if it's something else, it makes it so you can't shoot as fast. If I'm out hunting and I want to shoot something, I've got to take my mufflers, put them on, and then shoot. And so I think that's something to consider.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just for the simple fact, and on and for the bill, any time we're teamed up with the great state of California, that forces me to reassess our position. I am not a hunter, but don't really enjoy it. I'm concerned about the health and the safety of our hunters out there and forcing them to go without ear protection or by not having this silencer. I've always been taught, you know, if you're going to go out with a firearm, you better have all your senses about you. And that includes hearing. And so it's a health issue and a safety issue, and I would urge your favorable consideration of this important bill.
Senator Anderson?
But not just for hunting, it's more for target practice. I fire a lot more rounds at target practice than I do in the actual hunt. I don't think that thing's on, but who am I to know? Anyway, this only lowers it by 30 decibels, which may not be noticeable, but if Charlie can't hear me in the field, that's okay with me too.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, and I stand open to be convinced on this, that because I don't really know from personal experience what one of these silencers can do, and whether what's on the market now, if we do this, are we going to allow more efficient silencers that do a more thorough job? What are we getting into? I will say that in my case, and probably the case of most of the ranchers that live west of me and in this state, we can't control what happens on our places because too much of it's public land. In my case, in addition, I put a large portion of the ranch into the Muddy Mountain Hunter Management Area where I never see the individual hunters. They deal with the game and fish, and they give permission. And that's been a very efficient way of dealing with mixed public and private land, but I don't have control over what goes on there.
Senator Driscoll? Or Dockstetter, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. During the discussion, the only thing that I would probably add, I was there for the interim discussion. There was some use of it. We had one gentleman to show up and said it was important for his use in predator control with his business. Perhaps that's one thought there, too. And in some of the discussion I've had since then, that probably those who hunt and who are involved in hunting, they would probably come down on the side of asking for the suppressors.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, on for the bill. And to clarify a couple of points from the good senator from Natrona County, it's not really a matter of technology to improve the quality of these. You can improve them incrementally, but it's a matter of whether you have subsonic or supersonic rounds. The hunting rounds, which you can really, you know, Game and Fish currently regulates what you can and can't use for the ammunition, and they have that authority. as long as it's supersonic, it's always going to remain pretty loud, 140 decibels, 130 decibels. You're going to be able to hear that from a long ways under almost any circumstance. The subsonic rounds can be suppressed a lot better, but you wouldn't want to use them for hunting. They would be far less accurate. They don't carry very far, and they're a lot less effective. Plus, we could regulate those out theoretically as well. So it's not really a matter of future technology making these things absolutely quiet. It's just a matter of the physics behind it keeping them fairly loud, but far less than the 160 decibels that the strike will be under a supersonic round under normal conditions.
Senator Anderson?
Again, it's just a question in regard to accuracy and how they might affect accuracy. I know one of our partners over here suggested that his greatest use or benefit to him would be for target shooting. I take that as an assumption it doesn't affect accuracy, but I'd be curious. And the other thing, too, I bought most of my rifles at a much younger age. They're not quite antiques, but the idea of, you know, how compatible they are and what kind of custom work would it take to fit one on it. On a typical traditional, you know, hunting rifle, I won't talk about brand or whatever, but you know what I'm talking about.
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I want to just speak to the real application of probably, if we pass this legislation, what's going to happen? Maybe 1 out of 1,000 sporting rifles may be equipped. It really has more of an applications on the shooting range. We're not going to see people driving all over the place. What this really just comes down, this is a freedom of choice bill. Just give those people that are out there that are hunting an opportunity. If they want to use a silencer, which if we look at the statistics around the country for actual hunting, it's a very, very small percentage. So you're not going to have these stealth guys out there all over the country with silencers. You'll probably never see one in your lifetime.
Senator Burns.
An answer to some of the questions and maybe a couple of points that haven't been made yet. A rifle or a gun has to be specifically altered to take a silencer. It has to be specifically threaded on the barrel. The silencers themselves require an ATF license, a special license to get that, and that's a fairly expensive process and fairly expensive license. The silencers themselves average about $2,000 a piece. So you're be prepared to spend anywhere between $2,500 to $3,000 for a cheap one. Then they go up. And by the way, one of the largest manufacturers is here in Cheyenne of these silencers. One of the points that was made, one of the concerns, is that it's that the idea of legalizing silencers for hunting may increase or could potentially increase poaching. I disagree because silencers are already legal in the state. So if people are poaching with silencers, they're already poaching with silencers. What we're doing is legalizing the hunting and the shooting of silencers out in the field. So it's for the people who are legally hunting and the people who are legally shooting guns on at various ranges and so forth.
Senator Esquivel.
What position Game and Fish took on this issue? Yes.
Senator Driscoll?
Madam Chairman, I hope I do not misquote this. Game and Fish did not testify against. The Game Wardens Association did. We did not hear from any in any other states. I'll address just a couple other things. One, back to good center from Douglas. It does, on your old guns, it's going to affect them. The silencers have to be fitted individually to each gun, and they actually drill and bore your barrel and put threads in them. On the fair chase issue, I'll represent to you, any of you that hunt or have watched a hunting video of archery, if an arrow can make a herd of elk run over the hill, a rock band is going to make a herd of elk run a lot quicker. So if we're going to talk about fair chase, let's talk about making bow and arrow hunters say, bang, or shoot when they shoot their arrow. So let's really be serious about what fair chase really is. So with that, I'll...
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation. For Senate File 132, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 132 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, following that wonderful debate, I move that we rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
No. You want your A rating or don't you?
I need it.
Well, mine's like a C. It keeps going down. I should have said, like, it doesn't even come up until I see an A plus rating and publish it.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 29, do pass. Senate File 59, do pass, amended. Senate File 86, do pass. Senate File 90, do pass, amended. Senate File 91, do pass. Senate File 115, do pass. Senate File 124, do pass, amended. Senate File 126, do pass. Senate File 127, do pass. And Senate File 132, do pass. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's adopted, and the Committee of the Whole is adopted. Report. Whatever. Anything else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourn until tomorrow, Friday, at 10 a.m. The date would be January 25th.
Yeah. Announcement, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources will meet tonight in about 10 minutes. We're going to take up Senate File 112, raw milk. Senate File 133, livestock inspector search warrants. Senate File 143, cruelty to animals. And Senate File 150, salvage water.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. Senate File 147, Stroke Heart Attack Treatment Centers. Senate File 103, Electronic Cigarettes. Senate File 135, Assisted Living Facilities Regulations, in that order. And, Mr. President, if one of the early bills takes too much time, we'll hear public testimony on the later one, but not act until Monday.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, meet tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, over here in S-11, to continue our work on Senate Joint Resolution 1, Qualifications for University of Wyoming Trustee, and Senate File 38, University of Wyoming Board of Trustees.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will have a Joint Appropriations Committee meeting tomorrow morning, 7:30 a.m., room 204, on the General Government Appropriations Bill. And, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, the Senate Appropriations Committee, will meet tomorrow at 12:30 in room S-13 to consider in the following re-referrals. Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants. Senate File 122, Expansion of Medicaid. And Senate File 110, Registration Fees, Trailers with Living Quarters.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow at 15 minutes after the noon recess. Take up Senate File 156, Enhanced Recovery Carbon Dioxide Certification, and Senate File 157, Hydraulic Fracturing Disclosure Requirement. And, Mr. President, as we know, we were notified earlier this year of a person that was a friend of the Speaker of the House making a bronze The bronze is here on my desk if anyone would like to look at it. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S1 to take up Senate File 120, Sexual Assault Protection Orders, Senate File 141, Unlawful Use of Toxic Substances, and if time allows, Senate File 129, Motor Vehicle Accident, Serious Bodily Injury.
Further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, January 25th.